This interview with Dr. Chris Lintott of the University of Oxford about Galaxy Zoo is part of the Jodcast. For the full show and the archives, go to www.jodcast.net. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
You've been on the Jodcast a couple of times before talking about Galaxy Zoo. If you can just give us a quick reminder of what Galaxy Zoo is for those listeners who haven't heard you before.
Sure. Galaxy Zoo is a project that invites the public to help us do real science. So we have about 1 million images of galaxies from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, and somebody needs to sort through them by eye to make classifications, because the human brain is much better at this than a computer. We launched officially in July last year, and the response was overwhelming. We've got more than 130,000 members.
That's
so
a lot
far
of people.
And by January or so, they've looked at 40 million images. So we're now processing the science, the papers, depending on when this comes out, will be out. The first paper's already on AstroPH, and there are more than 20 separate research projects underway. But one of the best bits about Galaxy Zoo is the side effect, is that when you humans look at galaxies, they spot the odd things, the things in the corner of the picture. And the classic example of this is something that's known to us as Hanny's Voorwerp.
So where does the origin of that name come
from? Well, Hanny is a Dutch schoolteacher, Hanny van Arkel, who sent us an email saying, what's the blue blob in this image? And somewhere along the line, she or one of the other Dutch users on the forum started referring to it as the Voorwerp. So we thought this was something hugely technical. But as I'm sure some of your listeners will know, Voorwerp means object. But by this stage, we're determined that this name will go down, and I'm hoping it will be a whole new class of object, so we can actually have Voorwerps in, if that's the right plural.
So what do you know about this Voorwerp? What's odd about it?
Okay, well, let's tell you the story in order. So it's a blue blob in Sloan. It turns out to be very, very bright in one of the Sloan filters and very faint in the others. So that doesn't make much sense. It's kind of blobby, and it's largest. Yeah, blobby. No, that's what it looks like. It's near a fairly normal spiral galaxy called IC2497, and there's this blue blob of stuff, and it is blobby. It's got some structure, and it's very, very bright in one of the Sloan colours, but not in the others. And that's all we knew about it. We thought it might be a distant galaxy, what's called a Lyman break galaxy, so that its light had been redshifted to exactly that wavelength, which would have put it at a redshift of 2 and a bit.
That's because it's blue, so it would have to be even bluer.
Exactly, right. Exactly. So a distant star-forming galaxy. So we went and looked for it with the WHT. One of the nice things about doing this kind of astronomy is you just email friends and say, I see you've got an observing run coming up. Could you possibly look at this object for us? And mostly they do. And the spectra confirmed it's at the same distance as IC2497.
So that's a nearby galaxy.
That's right. So we've got galaxy, blob, clearly interacting in some way. The spectrum was also very odd because it told us that the gas in this thing was really hot. It's about 15,000 degrees Kelvin. But there aren't any obvious signs of stars.
So that's about 3 times hotter than the surface of the sun.
That's right. But this is not gas. Normally you see that sort of temperature in a small galaxy that's just formed a huge number of stars. But we know from the Voorwerp that there isn't significant star formation, and there aren't large numbers of stars there. So we now have a blob of gas in the middle of nowhere that's very hot. Clearly you suspect its neighbour.
Yes.
Now its neighbour's a radio galaxy, so it's got some sort of activity at the nucleus, and the Voorwerp's position, so it could be hit by a jet from the nucleus. So that's the next step.
Radio galaxies often have jets coming from
exactly
the central supernova.
And there's no sign of a jet, but we haven't yet got any radio data, so that seems reasonable. So the next thing we did was try and check for the presence of an active nucleus by looking in the UV and X-ray on the SWIFT satellite. So SWIFT hunts gamma ray bursts, but the rest of the time it sits around waiting for stuff to do. So you can apply to use its other telescopes to keep an eye on. So we got some very surprising results. We found the Voorwerp and the galaxy both glow brightly in UV, but we got a total of 3 photons in the X-ray in 5,000 seconds.
Which isn't very many at all.
No. We could name them, or we could just assume they're background noise. So now we've got an active something. We want the Voorwerp to be zapped by the jet from the galaxy, but there's not enough activity in the centre. You could put quite a strong constraint on how active you need the galaxy to be to do that. So it's almost as if the culprit has left the scene. So we can see the after effects. You can see that the house has been turned over, the Voorwerp's there, happily glowing in with its hot gas at 15,000 Kelvin, but there's no sign of the culprit. So, best guess at the minute is that this is a phenomenon that astronomers have got used to dealing with nearby around supernovae, which is a light echo. So imagine, go back 100,000 years, We think that the galaxy, IC 2497, would have been the brightest quasar in the sky. It has a black hole at the centre with lots of material being accreted, very powerful jets, and very bright. Something happened, and it turned off or it dramatically reduced its luminosity. So we no longer see that activity at the nucleus. But the Vorwerk is about 50,000 light-years away.
Off to one side.
Exactly. So it takes 50,000 years for light to get there. So it's still seeing the light that was emitted by the galaxy when it was active. So we think we've caught it just in the act of turning off.
Right, and these light echoes, we see them in other parts of astronomy, like stars, as the 838 Mon.
That's the famous one, yeah.
The really nice animation that you get from the HST of that.
That's right, and there's some really nice results that were out last week, in fact, or earlier in the year, where we know supernovae went off in our galaxy, and people have looked in the large Magellanic clouds, the neighbouring galaxies, and found the echoes of the supernovae. So by looking at those echoes, you could work out what light was emitted from the star as it went bang, and you can classify the supernovae. It's brilliant. So we're hoping we can do the same thing. If these are light echoes, then encoded in the structure of the Vorwerk will be the history of what happened as the quasar turned off. And that's important. We know quasars change on a scale of a few years. We see some of them flare and all sorts of things. Exactly. And we know that they change on very long timescales because we see the evolution of the population over hundreds of millions and billions of years. But we've never had access to that timescale in the middle, tens and hundreds of thousands of years. And hopefully we can work out what happens in that process by looking at this strange blue object.
I presume this means we have to look for 50,000 years at it.
No, because it's got structure, you see. So the Vorwerk is about 20,000 light years across. So if you look at the furthest edge, you're seeing a region lit up 70,000 years ago. If you look on the near edge, you've got 50,000. So you've got 20,000 years of history laid out there for us to read, if we can decode it. Now, this is all unpublished, and this is the current guess. The next stage is we need more observations. So we've got applications in for Hubble, for the VLA. We might come and use Jodrell if we can think of an excuse. We've got friends on Keck who are hoping to observe it for us. And we're just trying to turn every telescope onto this thing. And what's wonderful is that this is a Dutch school teacher who randomly found this during her spare time. And we've already used some of the biggest telescopes in the world to follow it up. It's an amazing story. And we've got a whole list of other objects from Galaxy Zoo which similarly look odd to the eye. And we're working our way through the list, and we will be following those up as well.
Well, this is all great stuff. And our listeners, if you are not already part of the Galaxy Zoo, go and join that, and you may find the next interesting object that gets the whole of the international community looking at the thing that you found.
Absolutely, and clearly if you do that, we'll put your name on the paper as well, so you can become a published astronomical author, which is rather fun. And also, by the time this goes out, or around the time this goes out, we'll have launched Zoo 2. And part of the point of Zoo 2 will be deliberately to encourage people to report the odd and the strange to us. So it's going to ask for more detailed classifications of galaxies, but it's also going to build in the fact that we want you to tell us when you see strange blue blobs or green blobs, which people on the forum call peas, or whatever else you find. Gravitational lens is the lot. So please come and register, join in with Zoo 2, and we'll work on that. And Zoo 3 is already in the back of our heads.
Astronomers always have to look to the future.
We'll talk to you about that at NAMM next year.
Very good. Thank you very much for talking to us, Chris.
Pleasure.